Welcome to this week's podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audioboo.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast with a K. My name is Christian Corley. I'm joined this week by James McLean and Brian Terranova. No, I'll say that again. Brian Terranova is here.
I'm back.
welcome to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Brian, where have you been for the past month?
It's been a month. Have I been gone a month?
I guess three weeks, maybe.
3 weeks, really? Jeez, yeah. I've been doing. Oh, that's right. My God, I have. Well, I was a pirate for a weekend.
What?
Yeah, I was a pirate for a weekend.
Where was that?
That was in Baltimore. I was in. I was in somewhere Baltimore, Fells Point. There it is. There was a pirate festival out there. One of my friends is in a pirate-themed band, so I got to dress up as a pirate and go hang out with a bunch of pirates at a festival.
Okay.
And it was a lot of fun, actually. Yeah, it was a little weird. Basically, I've got the whole Tenant style going on with the hair and the glasses and so on. So
have you? You've never mentioned.
I know, right? People kept coming up to me and looking at the pirate clothes in me, and they were like, you know, from the neck down, you're very pirate. From the neck up, you're a little Hollywood. So I don't know if I quite blended in as well as I could have blended in. But it was fun nonetheless. And otherwise, I went to Florida. Universal Studios and stuff. I got to do all the fun things.
So it's interesting. So from the neck down, you were pirate. From the neck up, you were Hollywood.
Too Hollywood for them, yeah.
So that is a very, very interesting situation where we have this interesting hybridity that sits upon your neck.
Yeah.
It is the hybrid.
It is somehow Hollywood and it is pirate, which 20 years ago you would say is pretty much impossible. And Hollywood agree with some bankruptcies around certain cutthroat islands. But, you know, obviously since Pirates of the Caribbean, which of course links to Florida, Hollywood and pirate means that your neck probably sits somewhere in that neck of the woods, to use a pun, absolutely accidentally.
It strikes me that if you're going to go to an event like that, you're going to bump into a lot of people who think they're Steve the pirate from Dodgeball.
I did not thankfully meet anyone who felt that way.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. No, these people. Okay, let me tell you you know, I can use a term that's going to sound terrible coming out of my own mouth. Let me tell you how thug life this place was. One of the pirate acts, one of the bands, and they also do like shows. They do theatrical things there as well. Wears an eye patch, right? And, you know, you're a pirate, you wear an eye patch. It's what you do. This guy actually lost his eye in a sword fight being a pirate.
What?
Oh, dear.
Yes. Yes, as part of the act, something went wrong with the sword fight. No, you know what happened? That's what it was. It was still part of their act, but what happened was during one of the Pirates of the Caribbean premieres, I don't know if it was the first one or not, they were invited out to come to the premiere of somewhere, I don't know where it was, but to be pirates and pose with people and put on a show for them, and something went wrong during one of the sword fights. The guy lost his eye. And he continues to do the job.
So is he okay with it? I mean, is he okay with the whole situation? There's no bitterness there. He's cool with it.
I'm trying to
work out whether it would be too obvious and too overdone and too discourteous to sort of try and make irony puns and things like that.
Like you just did.
Like I just did, yeah. Because you're kind of thinking, well, it sits there because that is exactly what it is. And then you think, oh, my God, there's a pun in that. And then you think, oh, my God, the pun in there actually makes the word even worse, especially if he suffers from it. But that's kind of weird because I don't know how you'd feel. Would you feel – I don't know, because it does – it's one of the few times where there is a silver lining, isn't there, to something like that, that it does actually sit into what you do. Even though in any other circumstance, there would be no silver lining to losing your eye, unless, of course, as you say, you were in the pirate That's the only place where you'd probably find that it wouldn't actually affect.
You know, the one thing that I thought about it was really kind of like, man, if I lost my eye in a sword fight while I was pretending to be a pirate, you know, I would want to protect my other eye as much as I could. I would go find a regular job, give up the life, and do whatever. But so then you would sit there and you would think, yeah, he still does all sorts of stuff. You know, even they use guns within the scene, of course, just with powder. But you know, you have to think though at the same time too. If you've lost your eye and you're going to sit there and consider giving up being a pirate when you've just got the ultimate pirate aspect of you,
yes, exactly,
shy of a hook for a hand, you know, like or a peg leg.
Well, with his, with a situation of a difference of depth perception, he may end up losing a hand.
Yeah.
In these sword fights, ending up with a hook as well.
Can you imagine, like, being a pirate or rather a pirate like job like that? You do lose your eye, and then you lose your leg, and like instead of feeling like the loss or the sorrow of it all, you're just kind of like, yes, I'm so much more authentic now. Like actually being excited about this possibility.
Like, it makes you wonder when you get when these sort of prosthetic hands, which are becoming, you know, with their ability to move, are becoming so I don't want to say handy because I'm just bloody full of puns, but you think so, like Star Wars fans might sort of not feel so bad about losing a hand and feel something like they're sort of Luke Skywalker. They've got, yeah, you know, you wonder how far it sort of goes when it becomes so natural. But it's an interesting story. I'm fascinated by it in a weird way, that how he's adapted to something that has affected him and moved on with it. It's sort of kind of cool. It's kind of funny and it's kind of shocking. I can't sort of place it.
He was a cool guy. He was a real nice guy, very friendly. So it was, you know, he doesn't seem to be sitting there bitter that he's lost this part of himself. You know, yeah, it was really, so it was neat. So it was a fun little event. I'm sure I will actually be heading out to more of those since I will be there to support my friend's band. But yeah, no, it was an entertaining time. Hot. It was probably the first weekend we had around here. Well, this is Baltimore, of course, but it was the first weekend we had where it was actually hot and the sun was out in full force. You know, otherwise we can't seem to get a handle on the fact that it's spring out here because we're still in the 50s half of the days out here right now. Fahrenheit,
here.
That
it's
is.
Same here.
Yeah, weird, right? I don't understand what's going
on. Way up to Edinburgh on Friday. When we got
you sound a little distant there, Christian.
So, I do. Sorry about that. It snowed up on the way to Edinburgh on Friday.
Did it?
And yeah, I mean there was snow capped peaks in both England and Scotland on the way up there. So
nice. Yeah. The first day of spring here, it snowed.
Right.
And I heard it was going to snow, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's just going to be flurries. Give me a break. It covered my car. You know, like, but then the next day, it was gone. You know, there was at least, I would say, an inch, maybe an inch and a half on my car. You know,
some
but
sort
yeah,
of,
it was like the first day of spring, you know?
Freaky weather indeed. So, James McLean.
Yeah. Corley, what do you want?
How rude. I'm not at school, am I? The Culture Secretary, John Whittingdale, has hinted that the BBC might be blocked from putting its best shows on in primetime television.
Yeah, I heard that. I never quite understood the rationale behind it. I must admit, I didn't actually look at it beyond hearing the headline.
Yeah, the idea is that it stops them competing with ITV.
On the basis that the BBC shouldn't be competitive.
Yes, I think so, yes.
Because I remember the BBC have returned saying that there's a marginal 1% or something in how it affects ratings on the ITV.
So, look, you've got the Culture Secretary and he's saying this, and, you know, there's been these various discussions about the BBC and the BBC's future. On one hand, they're saying that they're going to take the BBC's reviews out of the election cycle and there's not going to be another one for 11 years. So that in itself is a good thing. But on the other hand, there's this thing about the ratings and whether the BBC... I mean, I personally don't think the BBC should be chasing ratings. At the same time, I don't think that moving shows that are popular and when people know when they're on, I don't really see how stopping people from watching shows when they're supposed to be on is a good idea either.
Yeah, I think my initial gut reaction, and as I say, we've not talked about this and I have not actually researched it, so as I say, I feel horrendously bad actually making any comment on this at all. But it kind of, it almost feels like, but surely all this does really is benefit BBC's commercial side. In the sense, if you move away its competition, does independent, not specifically ITV, but does this not specifically benefit commercial television in the sense that it's got more chance of securing better advertising deals if there's less top end audience takers like the BBC is being moved away from that sort of scheduling? See what I mean? Does that not? Just the only people who seem to benefit from that really seems to be the commerce.
They could be, yeah. I mean, it might be. I mean,
I'm not saying that was the plan behind it. I'm just saying inadvertently, does that not become the issue?
I know what you're saying. And I agree with you, Patrick. I mean, I'm not wholly informed on this as well. I mean, there are various things that I do know. I know that, for instance, at the Radio Times ran their own survey on this and then sent it to the government in a password-protected USB stick. And the Culture Department still haven't contacted the Radio Times for the password.
Right.
Well, so they haven't read this feedback.
That's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? It just kind of feels that, I know it's easy to sort of say that with a right-wing government that is very neoliberal in its sort of outlook on commodities and, you know, products being the key thing in an economy, that you kind of feel, well, surely this just benefits those who make the products and the economy for money. I'm not saying that is their intention, because I think you're right. I mean, I think there is a genuine concern from government and other places as well, and from people like yourself and maybe me as well, that, you know, sometimes the competition, the BBC does run almost like it's a commercial venture, where if your show is not performing well enough, regardless of how critically good it is, it can be dropped because it's not beating the commercial side of television. That's the argument, isn't it?
Well, I mean, what happened to Ripper Street? It got cancelled,
well, exactly,
and then Amazon picked it up.
Absolutely, and it's happening by the looks of it to some degree with Musketeers. That's having the same issue, that it's not having the global impact that they hoped it would have now, and so it's being finished. But then at the same time, you know, this is television, isn't it? In the sense, you've got a lot of products. You've got more products than you have airtime, or potential products than you have airtime. So to some degree, how do you pick? And in some respects, naturally, an industry will always look for quantitative approaches, won't they, rather than qualitative. I mean, do you really want, you know, there could be a very high art, very highly acclaimed show, which no one watches, bar those who understand it and think it's amazing. You know, should that stay on the air, even though majority of people who pay a license fee don't enjoy it and don't understand it? Now, again, I'm not saying that's the right argument. I'm saying that is one of the arguments, because, of course, by that logic, all we would have is Homes Under the Hammer and Bargain Hunt and EastEnders.
Yeah, you stay off Bargain Hunts.
No, well, I actually quite enjoy Bargain Hunt quite a lot. I like Charlie Hanson. I think he's brilliant. I don't know the answer to it. I am just concerned. I think I just really would rather government stayed away from television and all medias. I think all governments, I think, should take a distance. I don't really think they're in a position. I think there should be far more independent bodies sorting this out.
I've long thought that it might be a good idea in terms of the BBC, is for the government to leave the BBC in terms of drama and programming alone, and maybe insist on news and current affairs being taken away from the BBC. Not so they can't do it, but so it's a separate unit completely.
It's a hard one. I don't know. I mean, I still find it amazing how much focus the BBC gets on its news output, on whether what it's saying is biased, or even from liberals will sort of say, you know, that the BBC is run, the news department's run by ex-Tories or ex-Tory editors or people with previous affiliations with conservatives. But ultimately, and I've never understood this argument, the fact is that television news is regulated. So it is going to be far less biased than the newspapers out there, which don't have this issue. So I kind of don't really see. I mean, I do sometimes wonder why some stories don't appear on the BBC, which, you know, strangely enough, a lot of rallies and marches don't seem to make much coverage. But at least television stuff is regulated, isn't it? And I kind of think that they're far less of a problem than you know, other media forms.
Mm.
Okay. So I don't really have a problem with BBC. Maybe you're right. Maybe separating it out would be a good thing. BBC News was it? So I don't know. Interesting.
Okay, well, we'll leave that and we'll move on to this next thing. James McLean, we've got more class news.
Yes.
Yes. We have got a title for the first episode, which is called The Prom. I understand this has caused a bit of a problem with some people.
Well, apparently we don't have proms in the UK, so yeah. It's obviously clearly being aimed at the US market, which to some degree is probably true.
Well, it's probably a wise thing to aim it at the US market, but we do have proms in the UK. My cousin's daughter went to one last year in a very expensive dress.
Well, I went to a prom when I was teen.
Well, hang on, so we're the same age. Surely you just went to an end-of-school party.
I think it was called a prom, though.
Really?
The girls came in you know, special dresses, and I remember I didn't comment on
that. But of course, you've got a butler, so you probably went
to... Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it was obviously one of those high-class...
Yes.
Downton
Abbey. Is it Eton or the other place?
The other place. We don't talk about the other place. yeah, so it was... yeah, we did definitely have proms. So I mean, we obviously have a sort of slightly... what's the word? Pessimistic view on class, which is perhaps unfair. I mean, well, this last couple of weeks, they've obviously been trying to drum some interest up.
We've got a police box.
Yes, the police box.
We've got Catherine Kelly's character. She will be Miss Quill.
Do you think the men's magazines are going to have sort of, is it set up for lines of this lass has class ass in class or something like that? You know, is that how many puns can you get out of class that might be I don't know.
I haven't read a men's mag since like FHM, 1994.
Absolutely.
Do they still do that?
I'm guessing they would. If I was editing them, I would, because I'm that superficial. I have no standards. But yeah, so I just kind of think, because obviously a lot of the promo shots have got that sort of youth feel, hasn't it? That what I'd call an E4 vibe about.
Right. Yeah. I see where you're coming from there. And then we've got this plans for a Barbara right wing as well, haven't we? That have been photographed and shared.
Again, interesting, obviously there to appeal to an older fan that probably wouldn't naturally be the focus of this show, given its topic and its channel that it's on. So clearly hoping that these Doctor Who elements will... I'd be interested to know whether they were always meant to be there or whether there was a lackluster interest in class when it was announced, and so they're a little more wary that these things have got to be there. Was the Doctor...
Maybe they announced it far too soon.
Well, I still think they announced it at a time where either they were looking to sort of try and get some positive press from a lackluster opening of the series... I can't remember which one is it. What series are we on now?
That was series 9 that finished last
series
year.
Series 9? Yeah. Yeah, whether that was to do with that or whether they were hoping that it was going to be a great accolade for series 9 and that the class would just roll off that popular press rather than these dismal viewing figures and everything else that happened at the time. But yeah, I think it was too early. And I think the other problem is that for a lot of people, sort of Sarah Jane Adventures sort of touched this sort of thing. Okay, they were younger, but school and Doctor Who's done it with The Caretaker and the like. I think people were a little underwhelmed, weren't they, by this? So it'll be interesting to see where they go with it. And maybe it will be good. I mean, they've got a good writer on board, but yeah.
Well, Catherine Kelly's reliable. So we have that, and she seems to be taking the focus of the publicity snaps, being the focus of the publicity snaps at the moment. So
I think the fascinating thing with Doctor Who is that because it is so, it's got such a wide range of audience appeal, and it sort of embraces and assumes so many different genre forms, that it's very hard to do spin-offs from it without the spin-offs not feeling like Doctor Who, unless they end up being like Doctor Who to a point where they just feel too constrained. They feel like a certain type of Doctor Who, you know. Sarah Jane Adventures might feel like a certain type of Doctor Who, but could never go beyond that type. And because so Doctor Who can do all these various different things, but it shows spin-offic can't. They're like frozen parts of Doctor Who. So they never feel quite part of that Doctor Who world, universe. It's a weird thing. I'm not seeing one yet that really worked. I suppose Children of Earth might be the only one that did. But I don't know.
I think there's a few Sarah Janes that are quite strong. I think Sarah
I Jane... really like Sarah Janes. Yeah, absolutely. I thought they were good. But then, as Brian always said, there was always that feeling that because Doctor Who wasn't always quite light and fun, there were certain aspects of Doctor Who where you could never imagine children running around with Sarah Jane Smith hordes of...
Well, I agree. I mean, that's why I think the unit idea should have been... would have made a better... I mean, obviously, it's impossible to do now. It should, you know, it should have been like 30, 35 years ago. But like the unit idea, and which is why a lot of people thought Torchwood might have worked better than it did. But yeah, Children of Earth aside, it really stuttered.
Do you think one of the mistakes was that a lot of these shows, I mean, again, if we go back to Star Wars or we go forward to Star Wars, depending on when I talk about Star Wars in this podcast, is that Star Wars at the moment, let's take Rogue One, which you mentioned, is very keen to aesthetically feel like 1977.
Yeah.
Is the problem that whenever Doctor Who tries to do anything from the past, it desperately tries to update it? Maybe there's things like, you know, when Torchwood was done, maybe they should have looked and sort of said, why don't we try and do something like UNIT and actually try and do that now? Not as in how it would work now, but do something which has a bit of an out of sync vibe. That is a sort of, because we seem to like that. We seem to like seeing pastiches of old stuff which has got a bit of nostalgia or a certain feel to it. Mm. I think the reason UNIT's never worked in the new show is because it has no character to it. While UNIT in the 1970s did. And let's face it, UNIT in the 1970s did not reflect the army. It was
not
a sort of
all.
Idea
not
of the
all.
Army.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can sort of say, oh, well, that was just how things were at the time. It wasn't. It was just a sort of made-up army unit. And so why they couldn't do that now, in that same sort of idea, where you've got a load of faces which are fairly friendly, which get together, you can see a simplistic hierarchy. It's small, it's compact. It has disposable characters. It has regular characters. That's all missing from UNIT. All it has is Kate.
And Osgood.
And Osgood. And that's it. And that's just not enough. So, yeah, maybe
well,
that's...
There's two Osgoods.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe class needs to think like that. And it goes back or goes forward to our conversations on the whole idea of creating worlds rather than just creating characters that link to the Doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's move on. It's Shakespeare. Do you know it's Shakespeare's 400th anniversary since Shakespeare's death? Not his birthday,
wow,
his
really?
Death day. Yeah, it's 400 this past week or so. There's been a lot of Shakespeare stuff going on in the UK. You'll have missed this because you were going on rides and sunning yourself and swimming in Florida.
And he's not in the UK.
And he's not in the UK. But you would have known about this bit if you'd have been paying attention.
Okay.
The Shakespeare show, which was hosted by David Tennant.
Yeah, I missed that. I was too busy on rides and
exactly,
swimming, so.
Yeah. Which was broadcast in the UK and in select cinemas in the USA last Monday, which was a live compilation of Shakespeare with David Tennant and Catherine Tate, Judy Dench, Benedict Cumberbatch, Helen Mirren, John Lithgow, David Suchet, Joseph Fiennes, Rufus Wainwright. Tim Minchin, various other musicians and actors all involved in that. It was very good. And so it was a nice sort of way of presenting Shakespeare, I thought, that hadn't been done, not on TV anyway, that I've seen before. Did you see any of it, James?
No.
No, okay.
Well, because I have been absolutely engrossed in the Clone Wars.
Right. Well, we might come back to that because we talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm still engrossed in it.
Yeah, okay, so
I don't have time for anything else.
Well, that's fair enough. Ian McKellen, Mira Sayal, and Sanjeev Bhaskar have all been in Doctor Who in Moffat's era. They were also involved. But also, the children's, the toddlers' BBC channel, CBeebies, also had their own Shakespeare thing, a version of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And that had Blake Seven's Josette Simon in it. as I'm terrible with Shakespearean names, as the Fairy Queen, and the Fairy King was played by the gentleman called Roger, whose name escapes me, who was in Planet of the Ood. He was the main security guy in Planet of the Ood. So there's a few Doctor Who people turning up in there as well. So all very interesting and nice to be able to give a bit of Shakespeare to young people as well. They're very young, to youngsters, to toddlers, people who can barely talk. So that's cool. So yeah, so that's that. So but Brian missed all of that. That's a shame for Brian. I mean, James says he's been engrossed in the Clone Wars. I've been engrossed in various things, but I still managed to watch some Shakespeare. So.
Yeah, it just shows what lack of dedication you have to those things that you're meant to be engrossed in. So not engrossed if you've got time to go and look at Shakespeare.
Well, it was work mainly.
It's just so many reiterations of Shakespeare. I don't understand how you could end up watching or listening to something which has been done so many times. While I'm, Star Wars. Only done once.
What?
I am excuse me, since coming back, I kind of I don't want to say engrossed because I don't quite know how to say this, but I delved into Daredevil season 2.
Oh well, yes, I watched that.
Not exactly with your Shakespeare there either, or in the Star Wars realm, but
no, I can't really say that I think either of us have I don't know. Star Wars is, I have to say on this Doctor Who podcast, that Star Wars has begun to absolutely fascinate me.
Well, that's good, isn't it? Because, I mean, I kind of agree. And, as I said previously, I'm looking forward to the Rogue One movie. And I do want to follow up on your recommendation, even though we don't do recommendations anymore, on Clone Wars and the other one.
Yeah, but I think what's getting me, I mean, there's a fascination. I mean, you talk about Shakespeare and, you look at our sort of classic stories, and it was something me and my friend were talking about this morning, and when serialization became a really big thing with film and television later, particularly obviously we talk about television, where serialization became very long term.
It's coming back in now, isn't it?
Serialization is how it affects these sort of standard story archetypes. We look at things like Shakespeare, which still carries those very traditional sort of genres of sort of the tragedy and the epic, and the way the characters move within the story arcs have a sort of familiar construct. When you get to serialization, you start to lose that, because obviously you can't have any resolution to characters, to main characters. They've got to carry on going. I mean, it's like Neighbours and
necessarily, because I could instantly say Game of Thrones, and then you end up with popular characters just been cut down in their prime and all sorts going on there.
Well,
and as there is a lot of kind of the Shakespearean, because partially because it's set in medieval times, or there's a medieval world, and a lot of Shakespeare is about the medieval kings and queens and stuff, isn't it? So that's the mirror similarity I'm looking at there.
Well, I mean, if we get past your pop culture rubbish there. And get back to
Star Wars. Says the man watching Star Wars cartoons.
But the point being is that, well, that's not true serialization, because true serialization, we're talking about taking this established construct and keeping it going and the characters. So what I'm trying to say is that those character arcs for characters which the characters are perpetually serialized can never resolve. Like I say, whether it's Ken Barlow from Coronation Street or Paul Robbins from Neighbours, they can play that sort of the Machiavellian roles whenever it's needed, but they can never get the true the resolution that is demanded of these sort of character types, because they've got to come back for next year.
Yeah.
So they've got to be there again. And so you get this interesting repeat, but you also get this serialization. You also get with this, all this sort of, in sort of interrelationships, this sort of intertextuality which goes on. I mean, I was watching, there's one episode of Clone Wars where there's the Hutts have got this sort of dance going, and they've got these sort of decks roll, record DJ decks going, but obviously futuristic, and they have this dance number which is very much like the 40s sort of dance which you see in, say, Temple of Doom at the beginning, in the prologue for Temple of Doom, where you've got that opening sequence to the with the wall of dancing, and it feels like that. And you're thinking, my God, how many genres is these things pulling from? Which itself is an odd genre in itself. And then it's pulling off its sister stuff, because to that sounds interesting. It's an odd phrase I think I would like to use too often, maybe. Where it's borrowing from things like Temple of Doom. I mean, who is it locating that with? You know, that number in this episode is so much like Temple of Doom, which was meant to be playing off the serialized, the 40s stuff and that sort of style there. Who is it talking to? And suddenly you start looking, you think, this is so much different to Beast, to Shakespeare. And you can sort of kind of see the differences when you're talking about this stuff, or how things have changed, that these works of old, while they still did draw influences from other classics periods themselves, it is a different beast in themselves. What, you know, Shakespeare to things like, I mean, as you say, Game of Thrones might be argued as a sort of intermediary of
let's flip this round. We received a bit of we've received some interesting reactions to last week's podcast, in which we were a little bit while we maintained our enthusiasm for the new companion, we weren't that impressed with the clip that we were given of her, particularly the dialogue. And, you know, I've had emails from people, we've had comments on Facebook. Thank you to everyone who's got in touch with us, because that's the most important thing for us, really, that you give us your opinions and what you think. So it's interesting that split. So putting that on hold and just thinking, like, you can pick up pretty much any TV show at the moment that isn't a soap opera, but it's a drama, whether it's a police drama or a genre drama, whatever, sci-fi, fantasy, whatever, and there is an ongoing storyline. Okay? The most that Doctor Who can muster is perhaps, over the last few years, has been having the same characters repeatedly turning up and then having them have some sort of effect on the finale, whether it be Danny Pink or Maisie Williams' character, whatever she was called in the end, me. So what I'm saying is Doctor Who started off, when it returned in 2005, with a very strong, probably trio of arcs, with the Bad Wolf, with the Torchwood, and with the Business with the Master. Since then, it hasn't really been as strong in that area, whereas other series aren't as kind of, they're maintaining arcs and they're going into serialization. Is Doctor Who losing out here? Are Doctor Who viewers losing out here? Or is Doctor Who maintaining its original 2005 format in order to maintain a popularity?
You know, it's interesting you should say that, because we talk over here, a lot of us, friends and I guess, and just a lot of people in general, have the feeling that Hollywood can't break their mold, you know, their cookie cutter concept of making movies and TV shows. And so therefore everything feels the same and there's nothing new. Whereas a lot of us have found that, like, British TV has offered interesting and new ideas, new concepts, new ways to tell stories and so on. And so to think that a TV show like Doctor Who would be stuck in that kind of Hollywood concept of it's working, why change it, is a really sad one to me, especially considering what your TV usually does for us. But in a way, it is, and they've tried to expand the mold, I think. But for the most part, I can't argue that fact that most of the seasons seem to continue the same kind of theme of storytelling, rather than try and do something interesting with it or even just get away from that theme. Period. You know, it's done, it's over. So yeah, I think they do.
It's interesting because, you know, I've been watching recently The Clone Wars, and
have you?
This is actually a serious point.
This is the new invasion, by the way.
This is what I hear is, isn't it? What I think is particularly interesting in that is, again, how it models on the 40s, these serials. But I wonder whether that would be a very interesting series to do with Doctor Who that borrows that model, where you have these sort of, to coin that sort of the Roman in media re thing, where it starts in the middle, where you have this sort of, I mean, the Clone Wars episodes will start with this typical bombastic voice, you know, General Skywalker on Tatooine, caught between the Separatist this is sort of builds up a very, very brief plot description that then the story follows through on, where the audience doesn't necessarily know anything which is built up. So you get this very, suddenly you're thrust into the middle of a story. I wonder how that would work with Doctor Who, where you'd actually take something where you position the Doctor already on a planet, already working with rebels, already fighting the Daleks, but the situation is, for the story, that they are trapped in a tower surrounded by Daleks, and one of them, the intro sets out, is a traitor. And so you suddenly set your parameters of a smaller story within a bigger story, but it just sort of decenters the audience a bit from what they're expecting. So instead of going serial, in a sense, actually borrowing from the old serials, that sort of idea of setting up standalone stories that thrust the audience into the middle of them rather than at the beginning. And so you sort of break down that format issue. I'd like to see some of that, I think, more than serialization.
You know, that's something you're along the lines of what I'm thinking, to be honest, because I actually think Series 7 had the right idea, although they just didn't pull it off. Which Series 7A, I guess I should say, where each episode was being viewed as a movie unto itself. And, you know, I didn't like having the title sequence be changed per episode and so on. I didn't mind the promotional pictures as, quote, movie posters. But that's something with the classic series to me that always worked really well, was that each story was basically a story unto itself. And unless you had a season like Season 12 where there was a theme that linked them all, even a loose one like that, which is why I chose that one, they pretty much just worked in their own, and the relationships between the characters was the running arc. I think the idea could be expanded a little bit, and I think that's one thing that's great about Doctor Who, because it is a TV show which, unlike Star Wars, Clone Wars, or even just Star Wars in general, which isn't grounded in one singular reality. You know, they're going to multiple time zones, they're going to multiple planets. So having each week be its own adventure, where you don't try and tie things like the missing planets or the master storyline or Bad Wolf into every story to make it seem like, you know, their lives aren't as random as they used to be anymore. Now it's all purposeful. I think that would be a good thing, because you can still have running themes, and those running themes can be connections of people. You know, there's other time travelers in Doctor Who, or the Doctor likes to revisit Earth quite a bit. Who knows? Maybe there's another planet he likes to revisit. But I think losing the setup in episode 1 that pays off by episode 12 or 13 would be a wise idea. I think you can do things more interesting in other ways. Like perhaps you might even do a setup in episode 3 that pays off in episode 6 just as something of its own little story. But it doesn't have to be the overarching story for an entire season.
I think that is a big problem with it, is that it becomes predictable. And I'm not sure whether the UK format of 12 episodes, or actually it's not even UK now, it's obviously it's one that is now appearing across the world, especially with things like Netflix, works fantastically well for series arcs. Because 12 episodes is a lot, really. It's not a lot, really, to sort of do a convincing pathway, I find. I think after 26 episodes, you have the space where the story arc doesn't become too pushy. But in 12, you start setting up a lot of those, not many of those stories can become individual when you suddenly having to insert this longer story thing. I just don't think it works well for 12 episodes.
Sure. And that's actually something that's why I brought up Daredevil. I'm enjoying season 2, but I don't feel it's working quite as well as season 1, because they have the running arc is disjointed. They have the Punisher storyline, and then, you know, 5 episodes in, they introduce Elektra for her storyline. And you still, of course, have to tell Matt Murdock's storyline. And it just doesn't feel like it unfolded quite as well as season 1, where basically you were learning about the Kingpin and Daredevil throughout the series. And the way that that was handled, it was actually an extremely well-done series, in my opinion, the first one. It was very well laid out, very well structured, and even for a 12-episode format, it did kind of feel more like what you were saying with a 24-episode format, where you had more time to appreciate and enjoy, because they took the time to focus on those elements. But here, I'm just feeling as I'm watching it, rather, like I can hardly sit through an episode almost. You know, I keep pausing it to go do other things. I just don't feel as connected to the storyline. Even though it's good, it just doesn't feel like it's dragging me in the way the first one did.
Well, I think in fairness for the second, from what I heard, that they didn't actually, the plan was to go to Defenders before season 2. I think they swapped it round late in the game. I think that might have caused a bit of a headache. But I totally agree with you. I mean, it's without going away from Doctor Who again, season 2. I think the other problem with season 2 is I think a lot of people criticize it. There is zero chemistry between some of the romantic leads. As a focus, becomes dull and charmless, and it makes the main three seem charmless and unsympathetic too. But yeah, so no, I think going back to Christian's question, I think it's an interesting thing is, do you go for more seriality or do you go for less? I think I would be interested in less, but you could do some interesting things. You could do a season which is like, and I still think, as we've said before, I think they need to do something like this, a season which is the Dalek War. Not a Time War, because we've done that, and I think it'd be boring to go back to keep rehashing that. But say a Dalek War, which is a Dalek War in the 26th and 27th century, and it's 12 episodes, and the Doctor is involved in those 12 episodes in different periods of the Dalek War, maybe not even chronological. And they could all be various things. They don't all have to involve Daleks, but all the stories would be on their own, so quite pulp and fun, but they would all be chained together in the fact that it sits within a rough 200, 300 year period. And then you could even do your last episode, you could do the end of the Dalek War, or if you're going to be particularly clever, you could do the beginning of it. I don't know. But so you could work seriality and a season arc quite nicely into something like that. And it wouldn't necessarily have to be all the same. It could be very different stories.
And I think that's a key thing, like what you're talking about there is do an arc that is possibly, for instance, in your example, a Dalek War. Because rather than focusing on the Doctor and the Companion's relationship as the arc, which they pretty much have done every season since the show came back, you're focusing on actual story elements. You're focusing on bad guys, but you're focusing on a grander scale, which affects more people than just the two and the TARDIS. And yeah. I think that's probably another huge thing, and maybe that's the best way to use story arcs rather than Doctor Who. When they did Bad Wolf, it was interesting to have that loose story arc. It got us all sitting there going, wait, this thing is popping up. You know, what is this? It got us all talking on the internet and looking for those websites, you know. And then series two, they dropped the ball because it was so in your face. Like, this is the thing you need to look out for now. And the only payoff was that we knew exactly what it was. You know, it just didn't work. But that, you can't stretch that very far. It was a neat idea to give us a loose story arc. This way we didn't feel like we must watch, but now we're invested. We're in the show. We're here. We're tied to it, and we want to be watching the show. Giving us a story arc like that, that makes us get invested, that makes us each week question what is happening, would really be worthwhile. But unfortunately, like, I don't see any true attempts at that, even though it does seem like they perhaps tried to do that, certainly with the Clara and Danny storyline, which, where did that go?
Is that another problem as well? It goes back to what Christian was saying with Game of Thrones, and it goes back to what you've been saying there as well, and maybe goes to the Clone Wars too. I don't know, but this idea that maybe Doctor Who is become quite constricted in the fact that it is essentially a two-person setup, and occasional familiar faces. That there's no ways to sort of spread out any seriality in the sense that other shows do, like Game of Thrones, where you've got multiple characters, so you can play around with multiple variations, combinations of dramatics between them that you can't really do in Doctor Who, because it is so set in that pattern of it just being two people. Yeah. So in a sense, I think the problem with Doctor Who is that it is set up not to be serial. It is set up the idea that you have two to three main characters, which, as I can't remember which producer said it, but it's essentially is, you know, you're adopting a genre of the week, and, you know, what genre are you putting them into this time? Is this going to be a horror trope? Is it going to be quite literally Frankenstein? Is it going to be a historical thing? And then have these three characters explore it. There's no real room to then be sort of saying, well, who else are they dealing with? Because they're not. But is that something they should be trying to... Therefore, are they putting into serialization, which doesn't work for the format? Or do they need to change the format so it works for serialization? And that might mean having to do something a bit broader than what they're doing with things like the Victorian lot. And that's not quite enough.
You do bring up a good point there, though. Like, there is just essentially the two to three recurring main characters, rather. And then when they try and do recurring characters, it always seems like, to me anyway, that those people kind of have a little too much power for being people who are only there like once or twice. They know and can do too much. Do you think it would be wise some way for the show to kind of figure out a season seven of its own, you know, a way to ground the Doctor somewhere for even just one season, where there are a set cast of characters and events that happen around. Because it seems like Pertwee's first season was tailor-made for exactly what we're talking about, and it's just they just didn't do storytelling like that in the 70s, you know. But maybe it has merit to try it now, and this way you can have running arcs and themes that work, because you've got the Doctor grounded in one place with a set cast of characters around him.
I mean, I don't think they necessarily have to be. I mean, I agree with you, Brian. I would try that. And like I said, even the Dalek War idea is that sort of idea, but in the future. Sure. But I think what they need is to have characters which relate to the Doctor, which aren't subject to being about the Doctor. And I think that is always the issue. It's okay, while the Victorian lot have their own detective things, they've got no real broader agenda. They've got no real other reason to invest, to sort of, there's no conspiracy, there's no larger pathway apart from the fact that they do detective work, and occasionally that's useful when the Doctor appears. And Torchwood never quite worked, even though that should have been doing the same sort of thing. They need something which feels like these different pockets of people within the show have their own agency and interests and goals and agendas that occasionally dovetail with the Doctor, or may dovetail with ideas that might involve the Doctor, like these larger shows do. And you're not really feeling it with Doctor Who. You know, these characters appear and they're always Doctor-centric. I mean, obviously, River Song is the obvious one, it's Doctor-centric. But even sure. Torchwood, Jack was Doctor-centric. Even the Vastra and that lot, there's still a feel of Doctor-centric, that they all light up when the Doctor's around, and suddenly it all becomes the Doctor show. Because it is the Doctor show.
Here's a thought, though. Do we think that Doctor Who currently should continue being a series of 12 to 13 episodes? Or would it be more interesting if they could focus just on the individual stories at hand rather than any kind of running arcs, which they seem to be utterly failing at in many respects? So I shouldn't say completely, but in many respects, the arcs just don't work as well as they are intended to. Would it be more beneficial if Doctor Who went to a kind of Sherlock format, but rather than airing all three episodes, you know, in 3 weeks in a row, make them events. Make it be, you know, like one in June, you know, one in, September, and then one at Christmas, you know. But like, make them longer rather than, which I know we've talked in the past that they have issues when they expand the story longer than a 45-minute format. But if they actually wrote movies and put them on TV instead. You know, this way we don't have to worry about running arcs. You just have the Doctor and his companion, and you just have adventures. We would get less Doctor Who, but less Doctor Who might be concentrated better Doctor Who as well. Might. I understand it could fail. But do you think there would be some merit in that? Like, rather than, if we're not able to make this story arc work, if we're not able to make this 12-episode format work, what if we shook things up with a different format for a little while?
I think that... their concern would be probably more about getting people returning. It's as soon as you start doing that, you don't have that regular time slot. I think that's probably the reason they don't. But I think if you say had, like in January or February, you had a three-part Doctor Who story over 3 weeks, then you had one in the summer, which was three parts, then one in the autumn. So you could do your 12 episodes, but spread them out over the year, as you say, and say in trilogies, four trilogies. And then maybe one final one in Christmas. That would mean Doctor Who's all year round. You'd have all that, what is now become so important in television, the build-up. Going back to Star Wars, was an interesting comedy post, which was just saying that, you know, Star Wars now and will be forever, for foreseeable forever, be a constant cycle of the excitement of pre-stuff, the rumours, then the first images, then the first trailer, then see the film, talk about the film, hate the film, look out for the next one next year. And it's going to be an annual cycle of that. And you think, well, maybe that is what is happening. Maybe Doctor Who needs to be doing that on a smaller scale, which is manageable for the BBC, where they'd say they three episodes in February, then you can automatically start the rumours on the next three episodes, build up the hype, come to summer, you have your next three episodes, you can build up for your Halloween special three episodes, and then your final three that goes over your Christmas episode and into the new year. And so maybe you're right. Yeah, something like that. It's not like, I'm not saying it's a movie, but it's condensing it into sort of three interrelated episodes of a storyline.
Which is great, because it works with what you just said with that Dalek Wars kind of storyline. Think about a three-part epic adventure that's being told. You know, you can even make the episodes a tad longer, but it's just one continuous story. It's like how we talked about how the X-Files, the six episodes, we had hoped that they would have been a six-episode epic about colonization. Well, you can do that with Doctor Who. Three episodes, this one, are about the Dalek Wars. You know, you can have three of them about some kind of Cyberman situation, three of them about something entirely new, but one continuous story. And I think that format could work really great. I think that's actually maybe something they should think about doing, because you're right, year-round Doctor Who, I know plenty of people would be thrilled about that.
And the other wonderful thing would be is that you could actually set up different, and they may need to consider doing this, if you set up different worlds of Doctor Who, which had a semi-reoccurrence. So if you had, I don't know, let's throw out a unit world. If you had a futuristic Dalek War, if you had a medieval thing where you have a set world of characters which you keep returning to occasionally over the seasons, but you have that set parameters. It's not just like a team in Victorian land is more like Ripper Street, where there's lots of different characters interrelated that when you can keep going back to and sort of exploring with all those characters, which Moffat sort of tries to do with the Victorian era but doesn't really do it properly. It's still just a Doctor-centric area with a few characters that he likes. But that, you know, so you're actually creating mini worlds within Doctor Who that you can actually go to and go back to and feel that they're established and you understand them. They tried it a little with New Earth, but never went there properly and did it. But something like that perhaps is what they could do. And so you create these little pockets of seriality with these, you know, you could have, say, 12, 13 characters introduced within a three-episode story. And then next year you could go back for one episode and those characters would still exist there and you'd still tell the story as if it was its own thing. So you weren't reliant on the fact that people had to have seen it all or remembered it from last year, but that could be a way to do it.
Absolutely. Well, that's a good thing. So what do you think, dear listener? You tell us what you think. Does Doctor Who need reformatting? Tell us what you think in the show notes, in the comments, or send us a message on Audio Boom, or just email us, or get on Facebook and verbally abuse us. It's up to you. That's all from all of us for this week's podcast with a K. Until next time, it's goodbye.
Okay.
Can you make some recording noises at your end?
Right, let me have a look.
Cheers. Are we doing just a short one today then due to that meeting, or am I going to have to duck out partway through?
You can duck out partway through. It depends how me and James go, I suppose.
Okay,
it says it's recording my end.
Okay, we want it to record the podcast though, not your bottom.
Damn it, man, I was going to go there and you beat me to it.
I'm glad neither of you did.
Hey.
Yeah, exactly.